Blog Talk Radio. Firefly Willows LIVE presents Evolve, featuring your host, Robin White Turtle Lisney.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us on this episode of Evolve, Nurturing the New in Consciousness, the Arts, and Culture, with your host, Robin White Turtle Lisney. Evolve brings you people and ideas on the cutting edge of change, opening the shells of the past to move our culture into the now. The arts and evolving consciousness are how we are bringing that change to the culture at large. Evolve brings you the wise, the foolish, and the heart-based to help us meet the challenges of the times we are in. Your host in helping you evolve is Robin White Turtle Lisney, who received her master's in fine arts from Mills College in creative writing in 2012 and her PhD in energy medicine in 2013. She is an author of 3 books, the most recent being Heart Path, Learning to Love Yourself and Listening to Your Guides. She has published poetry in many literary journals and numerous anthologies, and her poem First Step was selected for reading by survivors at the Virginia Tech Memorial Bench dedication in April 2010. In addition to her writing, Robin is also an artist whose work has been shown widely throughout the Midwest and East Coast. Robin White Turtle Lisney is a psychic medium and energy medicine practitioner through East West Bookstore in Mountain View, California, through her office in Santa Cruz, California, and across the country by phone. Robin travels across the country as a speaker and leading workshops. To find out more about Robin, you can visit her website at www.thecenterforthesoul.com. So take a breath, relax, and let yourself evolve with your host, Robin White Turtle Lisney.
Today we have a special guest, Teresa Dentino, who is an ancestral strega or Italian wise woman, an earth worker, and an initiated diviner. For more than 20 years, Teresa has studied and practiced in earth-based spiritualities. In 2011, she was initiated as a diviner in a West African tradition. She currently helps others reclaim their personal lineages through her divination work. Teresa is the author of The Strega and the Dreamer, a work of historical fiction based in the true story of her grandparents, based on the true story of her grandparents, in Ode to Minoa and Stories They Told, now exploring the life of a snake priestess in Bronze Age Crete, and Welcoming Lilith, awakening and welcoming pure female power. For more on Teresa or her work, you can visit her website, thestregaanddreamer.com or ritualgoddess.com. Welcome, Teresa. I'm so glad to have you with me today.
Thank you, Robin. It's really fun to be here.
Yeah. Well, we have an exciting show lined up today because we're going to be talking about all kinds of things, including divination and what's a strega and all kinds of things. So, Teresa, did I leave anything out in my introduction?
I'm teaching a class starting in January. Anybody who lives up in Sonoma County might be interested in that. So that's one more thing.
Great. Okay, so let's begin by just talking about the word strega, because that's an interesting, it seems like an Italian word, right?
It is Italian word. The literal translation is witch or screech owl.
Oh.
But it means medicine woman. The strega, that's the plural for strega. There were also male members of this lineage. They were called stregone. They were the village medicine people. So the strega that my great-grandmother, who was a strega, she immigrated to New Hampshire in 1899. But she was the strega of her village, and that in her time, that meant she was the midwife and an herbalist. And, she held the sacred space for her community. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, so then you wrote a book about this, Strega and the Dreamer. Can you tell us a little about your book?
Yes. Are you hearing me okay?
I hear you just fine.
Okay, because you were cutting up a little. Yes, the Strega and the Dreamer arose because I wanted to really try to understand who my great-grandmother was, because I had been told all my life that my great-grandmother was a Strega, but when she immigrated to New Hampshire, the lineage kind of got lost for a couple generations in my family because of, people wanted to fit in and go with the new ways and become Americans. So they left a lot of the old ways behind. So I wanted to find out who my great-grandmother was and try to really connect in with this lineage that I was born into. In the Italian tradition, the medicine lineages are very much family lineages. And so I wrote the book to try to really understand who she was and what had happened and to kind of get to know her. And the dreamer is my great-grandfather. He's the one who had the dream of America. And so half of it is a story of what it was like for the men who came over. He came over, and it took him 8 years to be able to bring his family over.
Wow.
And so the story takes partly in Italy, and then it has him leave and come to America and shows his struggle. When he was here, he worked on the railroads and he worked in the quarries, and it was a very difficult time for those men who came over and did this work. And then she stays in the village, continuing her strega life until he calls for her. And then the last part of the novel is her coming to New Hampshire, and she happened to come to New Hampshire just as midwifery was being systematically eliminated. And so that sets up a lot of tension in the end part of the book, where she's trying to hold on to her strega ways, but it's really almost impossible because she's just becoming really old-fashioned in everyone's eyes and illegal.
Well, you have a lot in common with me, because my great-great-great-grandmother was a midwife in Norway in the 1820s, and I wrote a book that's not actually published yet. I've not published it yet, but I'm in the process of writing a novel about her life, which in her life she was an official midwife in Norway, and the dream of coming to America wasn't really happening yet, because this was in the 1820s and 1830s. And then she passed away at 29 after 6 children and 3 losses of her children and 8 years of midwifery service. She died at a very young age. And then it was her children and her oldest son that charged and came to America. So in my story, her money that she made during her first really official kind of work as a legitimate profession for women in the 1820s gave the money and the time and the support to her son to come to America. And so we have a lot in common here.
Wow. So wait, how many generations back was she? You said great, great, great?
Yeah, she was the great, great, great. So she was it was her son Heinrich who came to America, and he was my great, great grandfather. And came with his wife Kisti from the same village. They were from the same village. Kisti Mu, they say, and over Kisti Mu. And the two of them came over together with a family they'd already started there, and then they settled eventually in northern Wisconsin. And so they came through the Great Lakes. So offloaded in Chicago, and were in Chicago for a year. And ironically, they didn't like the gangs, and they didn't like all of the prejudice. And so they decided, you know, because in that time there wasn't African racism as much as there was whoever the new guy was kind of prejudiced against. You know, they were prejudiced against whoever the new people were. And in their case, it was the Norwegians that were influxing at that time. So they were, you know, less than. They got the cheapest jobs. It's the same story of immigration today, just 150 years ago.
So
they left and went to the country, and that's they ended up in northern Wisconsin and then raised their children there, and actually had a really strong relationship with the native people, which is another whole novel that my someday will write too. So but anyway, I want to get back to your work, because you also do African divination. Can you talk about divination and what that is for those listeners that aren't familiar with that?
I wanted to know, did the midwifery get passed down in your family?
Well, I know. When her daughter-in-law came over here, we don't really know what happened, but I do think the names were passed down, and then my grandfather, born Heinrich, they had several sons, and one of their sons was my great grandfather, and my grandfather was born. My grandfather was a chiropractor and a healer. He had a really good healing hand, and he was at a physician, so he was really interested in physics. And I grew up with them, and they were wonderful. So indirectly, I mean, it was kind of skipped a couple generations, but not midwifery particularly. Healing, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, that's kind of what I meant. But
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So, well, anyway, maybe it'll come up later about the ancient Norse diviners. You know, but I'm getting ahead of myself. But I will. I'll bring that up later, because that also must be of very big interest to you.
Well, I actually, because of the Christian influence in Norway, a lot of the pagan ways were integrated into Christian ways. So there isn't a lot of information that I've been able to glean from my family about divination. But why don't we just switch to divination, and then we'll come back to the Norwegian ideas here.
Right. Okay, so you asked me what is divination?
Yeah, if you could explain a little bit to our listeners that aren't familiar with it, what it is.
Right. So this is, it's always a tricky question to answer, so I'm gonna try to take it slow. I believe divination is one of the most ancient art forms on the planet. And for me, what divination is it's a time to connect with beings or spirits or guides or entities, however you consider beings that are in other dimensions, beings that don't have physical embodiment in the way that we think of it. It's a way to connect with them and check in with them and get their perspective on how things are going here. Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing about divination is that because they're in another dimension and they have another point of view, they can let us know about things we wouldn't otherwise know about. Mm-hmm. And so one example to kind of illustrate what this means is one of the realms you can have access to through divination is the ancestral realm. Mm-hmm. And if you believe that the ancestral realm is important, then it can affect your current life. So anything that's not healthy or what was left sort of unmetabolized, possibly in one of your ancestors' lives, could be affecting your life now. And through divination, that can be revealed to you. And the kind of divination I do is called prescriptive. So you may be given rituals to do to help heal any energies that need healing in the ancestral realm. And then the belief is that then that will bring relief and greater ease to your current life and your descendants.
Yeah, and I have to say that I did have a session with you at one time, and the rituals were so helpful. They helped me. At the time, I was trying to ground in a place that felt like a whole new place, and having challenges with that, among other things. And I followed all of the rituals and did them, and they really helped me a lot. So I was really excited about it.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. That's awesome to hear. It's always nice to hear that it works. Yeah, well, the beautiful thing about this form of divination that I was lucky enough to be initiated into is that it works with the elemental beings. And the elemental beings, to me, are just pure magicians and little geniuses. And they just know sometimes, they seem to know exactly what needs to be done to, like, open and release energy or, you know, whatever the person's needing from their point of view. And they give you these rituals that just, I have found, really open a whole world almost when you do them. And sometimes they can lead you through a process of healing, or sometimes it can be more simple, just a simple offering can be the healing. But I find them to be very, very magical as well.
Right.
So I'm glad you had that experience.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, in my own personal work, not so much with clients, but in my personal work with my own self, rituals have been an important part of my life for a long time. My first book was on ritual, Dancing Up the Moon. And so for many, many years, I found them as a natural way for me to feel connected to the earth and to greater universe. And the spirits of nature really help you. I mean, if you get tuned into them, they're really... they're very supportive, and they do nothing but help. So I'm so grateful for them.
Yeah.
And,
well, because they're anything that we can do to heal ourselves, ultimately, I believe, will heal Earth. And that's their ulterior motive. That's what I believe.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
You know, they have an investment in this. You know, they have an investment in people coming to divination and carrying out healings. And lots of the rituals that come through in people's divinations are healings for the land as well. So, you know, it really is, everybody kind of trying to do their part to get things a little more cleaned up here on Gaia.
Mm-hmm. Right. I know what the place was had moved into had a lot of very heavy energy in it because there had been a death in the family there, and a young man who had passed away. And then there was a lot of heavy energy on the property. And while the apartment felt pretty clear, that the heaviness was really difficult. And so I did the rituals and then, you know, cleaned my place out really well with sage. And you know that my landlord moved out. They were living upstairs. And she ended up moving in with her partner. And the whole family moved out.
Oh my goodness. We don't ever really know what the healing is going to look like. Wow.
It was healing for family to leave that space because that's where their father had died and the boys were young. And, you know, it's young when he passed away. And so all the heaviness of the grief and of them being alone without him and all that was still stuck there. So all of that got moved and she moved in with a new partner. And, the kids had somebody that was a male figure in their life. And so it actually worked really well for everybody. It wasn't.
Well,
pushing
that's
them
amazing.
Out or anything. Yeah.
No, it's more about there's a lot of stuck energy, you know, hanging around that can be making trouble, you know, and it's not necessarily that it's something bad or evil. It's just kind of stuck. And so any of us who do ritual know that's one of the main reasons why you carry out ritual. You're trying to move energy and participate with energies. And that's great.
So well that I've since moved from that area and I'm in a new little cabana, little place. I'm in a house now and really moved on. And I think the whole thing has been a good thing for them, you know. And I know that the ritual that I did in relation to our divination that you did with me allowed me to help them move, you know, to help them move on, because it was quite a quagmire initially when I got there, and no fault of their own, it just wasn't the way it was. So we kind of touched on how divination helps to heal the earth just by that example.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have more to say about the divination that you're doing, the prescriptive kind of divination? Because there's all kinds of divination. There's tarot cards, there's runes, there's, you know, tons of different ways that we can get answers from our unconscious or from the greater universe. But I love the idea of the earth. That's a very important topic to me, of course.
Well, and also with the work you do, I mean, I would say the main thing a diviner of any kind does, for me, my main job is to listen, and listening, deep listening in itself is a very healing to give anyone or anything. And if we go into a divination and the earth shows up, you know, and can ask for something or says, hey, you know, this place over here is really needing some attention, go listen to it. You know, or here's what it needs. Go over there and essentially, there's just so much healing in that. And it seems to me that this was something, you know, this is something indigenous people have always done. And it's something all of our ancestors did more readily because they lived so closely to the land and on the earth. And, there just wasn't this natural separation that we've created in our modern lives. So to really step back into a place of really deeply listening to the earth and the elementals who, for me, you know, they are the mediators between the earth and the humans. If we can listen to them, that is just so healing for us and the earth, for this in general, but also because of the divide that our modern lives have created.
Yeah.
So just getting quiet and listening. But then there is a component to my work which, and I think this is more from my Strega lineage, I would say, or the European part of, you know, I say that I have a double lineage. So I have the Strega lineage, and I have this dagger divination that I was gifted through an initiation process. But also, once I started to really work deeply with my great-grandmother and this divination system, I began to try to go out more on the land and really listen. And that's when I found kind of a whole new component to my work, which is I maintaining places, like being a steward of the land, a spiritual steward of the land, and making friends with certain mountains and the trees in certain places, and making it a daily meditation to go to one of these places and listen and tend to it. And that's, I believe, a really big piece of work that the planet would really like back. They would like more spiritual stewards out on the land, listening to the water, listening to the trees. So that's another really big, important component to my work. I feel strongly I couldn't do the work I'm doing. I couldn't do the divination work and the healing work I'm doing without this supportive system of my local ecosystem. And for me, that's been a really kind of big discovery in the past, let's say, 6 years.
I totally understand what you're saying. From my perspective, you know, I had my kind of double lineage comes from my ancestors, but also comes from the Native American Lakota tradition and Anishinaabe traditions. And my connection with the land has everything to do with the healing work I do, because I can call on different levels of spirits to help a person. And so I totally understand. And if I didn't know about those nature spirits through Umbanda or through the Afro-Brazilian traditions or through the Lakota tradition, I wouldn't have the context to feel into what is needed, because the earth is like this huge healing being that we're all living on.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, and she's just so willing to help, that I just find it amazing what's available. And in our culture, because it's so busy and everybody's running around, we've kind of forgotten about it. And so I understand totally what you're saying. We're going to take a little break and come back. And I'm here today with Teresa Dentino, who's a Strega, Italian wise woman, and a diviner in the Dagara tradition for over 20 years. So we're having a great conversation, and we'll be right back. This is Firefly Willows, LIVE Blog Talk Radio, and I'm Robin Lisney, your host, and we're on the show Evolve. Evolve as part of Blog Talk Radio's Firefly Willows LIVE. And my guest today is Teresa Dentino, and she's an ancestral Strega and a diviner, and she's been doing this work for more than 20 years and practicing earth-based spiritualities. She was initiated into the West African tradition of the Dagara people. So, Teresa, I want to talk to you more about that because I found what you did. Of course, we did it long distance, so I didn't get to sit with you and watch you do what you do. But can you describe a little more about your
divination? Oh, right. You didn't get to see it. That's the bummer because you didn't get to see my hat.
You have a hat you wear.
Right. So, this form of divination can be hard to describe, but it is stick divination. When you do stick divination in this tradition, you get merged with an elemental being of the wild, and they're called the Wedeme in the Dagara tradition, and as opposed to the elemental beings of the water. So they split it into the elemental beings of the wild, meaning the earth and the four-legged and inside the earth and the telluric realm, and the elemental beings of the water. So I got merged, meaning my consciousness was united with three elemental beings of the wild, and I do stick divination, and I actually have a pretty big stick, not a small stick. It's a stick that both me and the person receiving the divination, if they're able to be in the room with me — I did Robin's remotely for her — hold the stick. So, it's a good size stick. And then I have a kit. It's called a kit, and it has all these pieces in it. So they essentially can be anything, but a lot of them are natural objects. And each one either represents an archetypal energy of this tradition, or they represent a healing journey that someone who has come for a divination and experienced the healing has then returned and put in my kit. So I have all this kit of, let's just call them objects, but they really are alive entities that are sitting beside me and the stick, and the stick chooses which one of those want to speak to the person who has come for divination that day. And then each piece comes in and has something to say. So that's kind of like the basic format of the stick divination, but it's always different for everyone.
Do you do it on a jere, like a medicine wheel, or like a place for the four directions? I mean, do you throw these sticks? Like, I know in Mbunda and the Candomblé traditions and the Afro-Brazilian traditions, they have cowrie shells and they throw the cowries over a medicine wheel, or and then they land in different places, up or down, and that tells them things. So that's the form they use. But do you toss these sticks, or is the big stick?
No, this is right. That's what I thought the first time I went for a stick divination. That's how I imagined it was going to be as well. But in fact, it's not. I have one stick, and it's a large stick, like from a branch of a tree, and I hold that stick. And that's why I call this tree medicine, because for me, I believe after I invoke and the Wedeme have come to be with me to do this divination, because it's really them who are doing it. I'm like a translator, I'm listening to what they're telling me and trying to language that to the person sitting in front of me, which for me, that's the trickiest part of divination, is trying to really hear what they're saying and translate it appropriately. So my stick, after I invoke, my stick kind of becomes the way I see. So I begin to see with and through the stick, which I believe means I'm connecting to the world tree. Now, every person who does stick divination is not going to agree with my assessment and description, but this is what happens for me. So I connect into this nine-dimensional world tree, and I'm able to see. And I don't, the pieces are just sitting beside me. I don't throw them onto anything, and I don't work with a medicine wheel. It's simply that the stick then picks some pieces that want to speak to the person. And then I listen to the pieces, because they're, like I said, they're alive, they're entities, and they tell me things that the person needs to know. But I do also use cowrie shells, and the reason why I use cowrie shells in this tradition is to check myself. So let's say I'm getting, I think I'm getting some information, but I want to make sure I'm hearing the Wedame correctly. So I use the cowrie shells to confirm that I'm hearing them correctly. So it has its own kind of check and balance built into this divination system, which I also really appreciate, because they show me a lot of images and a lot of pictures, and if I'm in my own way, I could be projecting my own ideas onto what those mean. But since I have the cowrie shells, I'll say, are you trying to tell me that that horse over there means this person needs to buy a horse, let's say? And they'll say, no, that's not what we're saying at all. I'm like, oh, okay, you know. So I'm very thankful to have a way to check my own interpretations of what is being said to me.
Yeah.
And they will make sure I get it right. They are very precise and articulate in what they're trying to communicate to the person. And I love that about them. I mean, even down to words I can use. They won't even let me say certain words a lot of times.
I love that. I find that too when I channel and do mediumistic work, that the spirits are very specific. Like the images I get are very specific. And if, because I see images often when I'm reading. And then what happens is like if I'm misinterpreting, I'll get like I get it more viscerally, like I'll get a tap on the shoulder, or I'll get, you know, like they'll say, no.
I actually hear like a, like, oh my goodness, wrong answer. No, not that. No, don't say that. No.
So they have their own little buzzer for you.
It's like the gong show or something.
Yeah.
Which, again, I'm thankful for. I'm like, please, you know, I mean, I don't want to give information they're not meaning to give. And also, yeah, I think that, well, that's what makes me feel like, you know, makes me trust it as well.
Right.
When corrections come and, you know, you're like, no, you didn't get that quite right. Try again. So it's important.
It is important because you don't want to lead people astray with your readings, and you want to be sure that they get exactly what they're needing. So that's really important. So you see it as a healing art as well, then, the divination, I imagine, because it.
I totally see this as a healing art. Yeah. I mean, especially with the ritual. Well, first of all, there's a lot of components. I feel that just simply a person deciding they need to come and get a divination means somebody somewhere in their pantheon of beings that are around them has tapped them on the shoulder and said, listen, I'm trying to talk to you. Go over there and so I can get the message. So that's already started some kind of healing process in the person. And then when they come, you know, and the Wedame get to tell them what they're seeing as issues that need addressing, and they're given rituals to do. Those rituals are all for healing. I mean, it's all about healing. That's what it is, in my opinion. But also the divination space itself, I feel, is a very healing space, because when you invoke, and you must know from your work, you call in a lot of guides. And you call in a lot of help, and so they come. It's not that you're just you're not just calling for no reason. I mean, they come when you call them, and they're in the room, and that's very healing. And a lot of times in the divinations, people are asked to do things right on the spot for healing, like maybe talk to an ancestor that they maybe left things not so happy with, or they have something to say to them. Say it, you know, and a lot of healing can get done right in the divination space. And so I believe it's completely a healing art. Yeah, very much so.
Well, in divination, like earth-based tradition in general, are based more not so much on belief as experience. So when I know when I'm too really tuned in, like when I've done sweat lodges in the past and so on, and led them, what do I find? That the spirits are working through me, but they're also like really helping through people's experiences. So they're connecting with everybody in the lodge, you know, and they're helping to kind of get the lodge the healing that they need. People have their own experiences in there that kind of transcend belief, don't you think? Or do you experience that? Yeah.
Oh, I totally do. I mean, I guess you might want to believe that there actually are beings in the other dimensions. That might help a little bit, but but I guess maybe you don't have to. But I think you're right. I think it's a totally experiential. And the whole thing that we were talking about earlier about moving energy, you know, like a lot of the rituals are to try to help this person move a certain energy either in their body, in their psyche, in their ancestry realm, or to start to have an experience with beings in other dimensions. So they might want to help them open a portal with a tree by saying, hey, go make an offering to this tree, you know. And so in that way, they might find that the tree responds, which... Uh-huh. Typically, I notice, I mean, I guess that the ultimate goal is to get a response when we do a ritual. And so, but it doesn't matter what you believe, because I just think that that's all human constructs and that the beings in the other dimensions don't have those.
Right.
If that's what you meant. Yeah. And so it's direct experience. Experience. And that's another thing that I really love about this work and this form of divination is it puts it in your hands. You know, this is up, and they're saying if you go do this, it will help. But you have to go do it, and then you have a direct experience, and that's your experience. That's nobody else's belief. That happened to you, and if you want to deepen it, you have the option to deepen it by continuing. Nothing, in my opinion, can replace direct experience.
Right. And I agree with you. I've found that so many times it doesn't matter what people's background religion is, like if they're Catholic or Jewish or Hindu or whatever, when they come into direct contact with the divine through nature or through divination or through different just being, just, you know, sitting and being, that their transformation, there's a huge transformation that sometimes happens with people, because it's like, oh, that's it. I see. That's what I've been believing all this time, but here it is, you know. So there's a whole different reality that actually breaks open with experience, direct experience, as opposed to,
right,
you know, belief systems that lock you into
One of the main things people say is, this is so validating, you know, because they'll come in for a divination and I'll see something that they have felt with them all their life, or they've known about, but, you know, they didn't. So, and then I see it, you know, so it's very validating. And also going and doing the work and getting a response is very validating, especially in a world where this, you know, a lot of times people can think you're crazy for having these beliefs, and, you know, it's just so secular. But I also, I mean, they, all kinds of traditions and beings and come into divination. I mean, there is absolutely no discrimination for who's welcome into a divination. I've had archangels, I've had Jesus, I've had Mary, I've had, I mean, just, it doesn't matter. It's what the person believes and who is with the person. That's who comes with them. And, you know, that it doesn't matter. It's fascinating for me to see the overlap in the belief system. So if I'm holding a piece in my hand that in the Daggara tradition represents a certain entity in their tradition, and then an entity comes in like from mythology, you know,
right,
And it's the same entity. It's the same, like, oh, look, over here they call you that. Over here they call you this. It's
yes,
the same.
Yes.
It's
yes.
that. And I just adore that because it just shows how, you know, it's kind of more what we project onto these beings is how they show up, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I don't
uh-huh.
know it, how we see them. But it's
uh-huh.
the same energy vibration that they're carrying.
Uh-huh.
So they, you know, it's kind of like just people in all different cultures wear all different kinds of things.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, yeah.
So
yeah, and
I love that.
I love it, too. What the spirits tell me all the time when I'm channeling or doing work, or they'll come in, like last night I had a meditation, and they came through and they gave information to people. And what they often say is, you know, we work together over here. So it doesn't matter what religious channel you come through, that the spirits all work together. And the different pantheons from Egypt and Mesopotamia and Africa and Christianity, all of the different ones, and Judaism, they all work together on the other side. They don't discriminate. We're the ones who discriminate. So I think it's really fascinating. Yeah.
Right, but there are different lineages. So
yes.
And that's fascinating because there are a lot of people who come for divination who I can see that they're from a medicine lineage. And a lot of times when, let's say it's a great-grandmother who's trying to pass a secret teaching to this person about their lineage, I'll get this, this is not for you. You're not allowed to use this. This is for them. And so in that way, it's also fascinating because some of the secrets that want to get given back to the descendants of these medicine people, they do want them still held within that lineage, and they don't, you know, I'm just a messenger girl, so I have to assure them that, you know, I'm not going to go do this now because I heard this person get it, and I find that fascinating as well.
Yeah, I find that fascinating too. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll come right back. And I'm here with my guest, Teresa Dentino, who's a strega, an Italian wise woman, and a diviner in the Dagra tradition. And we'll be right back.
Evolve, nurturing the new in consciousness, the arts, and culture, with your host, Robin White Turtle Lisney. Evolve brings you people and ideas on the cutting edge of change, opening the shells of the past to move our culture into the now. We are all in great need of sustainable ideas for change. Evolve brings you the wise, the foolish, and the heart-based to help us meet the challenges of our times. Join us the third Thursday of the month at 2 p.m. Pacific Time for Evolve.
Hi, I'm Robin White Turtle Lisney, and I'm your host on Evolve. I wanted to share with you a few of the things that I'm doing beside the radio show. You can always go to my website, www.thecenterforthesoul.com, and that is www.thecenterforthesoul.com, and you can learn about all the things that I offer, including readings, healing work. I'm a medium, a psychic. I'm also an artist and an author. You can check out my books. The most recent ones are called Poems for the Lost Deer, and the other is called Heart Path Handbook and Energy Medicine Guide. Both these books have been published this year in 2014. So I just wanted to share that with you, and now we'll go back to the show.
Hi, this is Robin White Turtle Lisney, and I'm here with Teresa Dentino, and she's a West African diviner in the Dagra tradition, and also an ancestral strega, and a strega is a wise woman in the Italian tradition. So I wanted to talk a little more about writing and the books that you've written, because you've taken some of the things that you know about from your grandmother and from different traditions. I love that you studied in Minoa. I mean, that you studied the Minoan traditions. Can you talk a little
mm-hmm.
more about your writing and books and divination and the intersection of all that stuff?
Mm. Well, yes, I've been a writer for, oh my goodness, a lot of years since I went to college. And my first two novels are based in Minoan Crete, and they're about a snake priestess. And the first one, Ode to Minoa, is, I guess you might call it a coming-of-age story for this girl in this culture who is chosen by the snake goddess to be one of her priestesses. And I wrote that book because I really wanted to understand what it must have been like to grow up in a culture that worshipped the goddess and as a woman. And so for me, you know, my writing process often is that I write to try to understand something and to try to really feel something. And so I do a lot of research and then kind of wait for the story to show itself to me. And I find that that has helped me in my divination work, in that I really, again, it's a process of listening.
Uh-huh.
So kind of, I see it as like kind of filling myself up with all this information about Minoan Crete and the remains and what they found there, and just kind of like stuffing myself with all this data. And then I kind of let it churn, you know, it's kind of like, feel like shove it in until I can't take anymore, and then wait for it to turn into a story. And so that's kind of how I go about my writing process. And it's worked for me, but I think it really has helped me in my later years. You know, when I became a diviner, I kind of knew how to take in all this data and then try to hear, what's what? You know, what are you saying about this? What does this mean? But also it's kind of intriguing because my Crete novels are both about a snake priestess who is in essence a diviner, a priestess diviner. And I had no idea that later I would be called to become a diviner. I mean, it was not on my radar at all. And I only realized, you know, after I became a diviner and even was divining for a while, I went back and looked at my two Crete books. I'm like, oh, what the heck? That's weird. How did that happen?
Now, it's so interesting to me because listening to you talk about my process of writing is very similar to my process of writing, especially novels. You know, like that's how I started writing that story of my great-great-great-great-great-grandmother. I just wanted to know what her life was like. You know, like I'd been to Norway, and the first thing that they told me when I got off the boat was, well, do you know about your grandmother, right? And I was like, no. Like,
oh my god,
her son, my great great grandfather, was illegitimate, and that was they've been talking about that for 150 years, and I thought that was so interesting. So I thought, well, that's interesting. And I see that, you know, what is this word in the big book there? And they said, oh, that's a midwife. She was a midwife. She was an official midwife. And I was like, well, that to me is so interesting that she was a midwife and she had a child out of wedlock. And then as I started researching it, what I found is that that was quite common, actually. Children out of wedlock, because weddings were really expensive, a lot of times couples would get together, and as long as they were committed, they could have a couple kids before they had the wedding. And so it was really quite common. But so then that started getting my wheels turning, like, what was her story? And so that's how I started writing the novel, to kind of find out, you know. So our processes are really similar.
It's a form of invocation. I mean, we're calling these ancestors up when we're doing that. We're trying to, you know, we're calling on them. And guess what? They show up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah.
what I was saying about when you're invoking. And it's the same for these priestesses in Crete. I mean, they were real women. They were alive. They actually existed, you know, in Crete at a certain time. And so my digging around and, who were you? Who are you? Tell me your story. I mean, we're invoking them when we do that. And
yes.
So if it goes really well, they're standing in the room with you. Like, okay, here's my story. And
right.
I mean, that for me is the bliss of writing fiction. I just love that the characters, you know, become alive and you're interacting with them and they become so real to you. And, you know, it's a trauma to end the book.
Yes. It is sometimes. I mean, I think that's why I haven't finished my novel, because I kind of hate to leave her. Like, I hate to leave the story, you know. So I understand what you're saying. One question I have for you is, how do you believe that healing is accomplished through your writing when you're writing? Do you find that you get healed while you do the writing?
Yeah, well, writing is such an interesting process, which you know, and anyone else who writes, it's so fascinating because there's the writing process. So you're writing, and yes, I think that's extremely healing for the person who is writing, and also I feel for all the untold stories on Earth. So I think it's even healing just in the etheric realm to pull through a story that hasn't been heard or that wants to be heard. So I feel like that's all very healing. But then there's this strange thing that happens when you publish your book and people start reading it, because that's a whole different healing experience, because people bring themselves to a book. And when they're reading the book, you know, they have their own interaction with the material based on who they are and everything that they know. And so sometimes people will tell me the experience they had reading one of my books, which I'll be like, wow, that's amazing. You know, that's a whole different experience I had writing the book, but because that's a whole different experience, reading a book
and writing
a book. And it took me a while to get used to that. It was a bit jarring when my first novel was published. I was like, wow, what? That's what you thought that was? But then I understood that. Well, yes, because they're going to have their process as reader. You had your process as writer. It is not the same thing. And but that's the intersection, I believe, that the writer is really ultimately going for when they're writing. They're trying to communicate something to an unknown reader. And it's really a fascinating thing to think about, because we don't really know who reads our books. I mean, you know some of the people, but ultimately you don't know who's going to read it when you're writing it. So you're writing, you know, to like this person you never met, and it's beautiful when the communication works.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I know. I love it when that happens. I've written, you know, other books, mostly how-to books and things, and then I have a poetry book, and I've noticed that when people read the poetry book, they're like, they're shocked, a little shocked, because the book is about an incident that occurred in Marin County, an actual incident that happened through the National Park Service, where they eliminated all the axis and fallow deer in the national seashore. And they were like sacred deer to me. And so I had to write this book about like what happened and how did they get to this and the clashes in consciousness and all this. And so it's really interesting like how the book helped me, but what I was hoping it would do is help heal the people up there, because it was such a huge, awful thing that happened. And and what I found is that a lot of people don't want to go back into it. They don't want to deal with it. So a few people that have read the book that are up there are like, oh, thank you for writing this. But other people are like, I don't think I even want to go there again. You know, like they don't want to relive it, or that it isn't healing for them. It isn't somehow... So that was interesting, because it certainly was healing for me to write it, but we'll see what happens. I mean, it's just getting out in the world. It's just fascinating to have different reactions, you know. So
right, and it might need a different audience for the, you know, for that, like the people that weren't there, maybe.
Right. And, I find that people that are dealing with similar kind of things in other places where National Park Services are eliminating species or managing species, that they can relate to it almost more easily than the people that were actually lived through it. You know, for them, it's too close to the quick, you know. So,
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, well, we have so much more that we could talk about. But we'll have to, I'll have to have you on for another show. We could talk more about the African traditions, because I've had experiences with Afro-Brazilian traditions that are a little different than the direct African Daggera tradition that you've been involved in. But there's so much more that we could talk about here.
Right, because I still didn't tell you about the Norse priestess diviners.
Oh, yeah, the Norse priestess. So talk to me about that for a little bit, and then we'll close on that.
Yeah,
on that.
Well, I have to just, I'll try to think of how I can just, well, and so this, just to put a plug in for the book I'm writing and almost finished writing, which is about priestess diviners through time, because I became really almost obsessed with this divination and how women carried it for so long. And I'm trying to find it in all different cultures, and actually I am. And one of the cultures that I found it in is the Norse tradition in Europe. And there's a wonderful book written by Ralph Metzner called The Well of Remembrance, which you might want to check out, Robin. And he talks about these ancient priestess diviners in the Norse tradition who were, the singular word is vulva. I mean, okay, right? And this, yeah. The plural word is volur. And they were these women that were known for their divination skills, their powerful divination skills. And they walked around with a stick. And they, the word volur and vulva actually means wand web, which, you know, it just felt so resonant with the kind of divination I do, because you're merged with this stick, basically, this stick medicine. And I, they would walk around in groups of 9 or 13 and go from town to town and do their divinations, which it sounds like they would sing. Their invocations were songs they would sing, and then one of them would speak her divination. And they would speak the divination in the form of verse. And the thing that's like the ultimate, the climax I'm leading up to here is that a lot of their divinations actually have come down to us as very famous myths. And one of them is called the Volutsa, which is the song of the vulva. And from that divination, Norse mythology came. Or a lot of it.
Oh, really?
And that Norse, yeah, I get shivers. And Norse mythology is what gave us Wagner's Ring cycle of operas, if anybody's seen those. Brunhilde. And Lord of the Rings, and so on and so on and so on.
Wow.
So the power of divination on this planet is huge. You know, if divination actually possibly created our mythology, that's still really, you know, we're still really embedded in these stories, and it came from divinations. For me, that's a big wow.
Wow. Oh, that's fascinating. Well, I would love to talk more with you about that, The Well of Remembrance by Ralph Metzner. I'm certainly familiar with his work, so I'll have to read that book. So thank
yes,
you. What's the title of your new book here? Do you have a title yet, the one you're writing?
Yes. The new book is called The Amazon Pattern, and then the subtitle is Messages from Ancient Priestess Diviners of Trees and Time. And I mentioned the velour in that as the part that's talking about divination through the ages, and how that's, you know, the importance that that has had on our culture and us as humans.
So Amazon Pattern, Priestess
Diviner. The Amazon
Diviner.
Pattern.
The Amazon Pattern, uh-huh. And it's the Priestess Diviners of Trees, and what was the last word you said?
Time.
And time.
Trees of trees and time. They were, I have a whole theory that I talk about in the book, that these women were priestesses of trees and time, and through their divination, which was, you know, they worked with the trees and time to carry out their work to send us a message.
Wow. 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 How cool. Well, we're going to have to get together again, and I want to read your books. So where are your books available? And I want to also make sure you tell us about your websites, and then we'll say goodbye today. So.
Okay. Okay, so, well, first of all, thank you so much, Robin, for having me on the show. It's been really fun.
I knew it would be.
So my books, if you live anywhere near Sebastopol, California, they're available at Many Rivers Books and Tea, which is a lovely spiritual bookstore in town. They're also available on Amazon and other online bookstores, and they are available through both of my websites, one of which is thestregaandthedreamer.com, and the second is ritualgoddess.com. And I blog pretty regularly on Ritual Goddess about a lot of the things I've been talking about today, about divination, priestess diviners through time, trees. So if you're interested, you might want to check out ritualgoddess.com.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been just delightful talking to you, and I hope you have a good winter solstice holiday this year. And thanks so much, Teresa Dentino. I've been talking to her today. She is a diviner in the Daggara tradition and an ancestral strega, or an Italian wise woman. She has a number of books, which she just mentioned, and she helps does readings, helps people reclaim their personal lineages through her divination work. So look for her books, The Strega and the Dreamer, and Ode to Manoa and Stories They Told Me, and Welcoming Lilith, Awakening, and Welcoming Pure Female Power. So you can find her work on ritualgoddess.com. Teresa, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for joining us. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is Deb Caracella. Please join us next time on Firefly Willows LIVE for Convergence with John Caracella, Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m.